Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
This is the story of Harry's. For decades, one big razor company has relentlessly increased prices and reaped immense profits at the expense of its customers. Then one day, an ordinary guy got ripped off buying razors. He was so fed up that he and his best friend started a company to fix shaving. They called it Harry's. By taking less profit and selling online, Harry's can offer quality blades for less. You can even get Harry's 5-blade razor and shave gel for free when you sign up. Just cover shipping. Click or go to harrys.com and enter code RAZOR at checkout. That's RAZOR, R-A-Z-O-R.
Welcome to the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Jake Litarski, joined today by John Littering. If you're out there on Twitter, you can give John a follow at JonLitterine. You can follow me at JakeSki52. Today we're going to be making our fantasy picks for the biggest fights of UFC 208, an event that's going to result in an inaugural women's featherweight champion. John, to get things going, I got to hand it to you. Had a good night in Houston, 8-4 overall on those picks, and an excellent call on the Korean Zombie upset pick. How'd you know ring rust wasn't going to be a factor there?
Well, you know, I obviously didn't, but, you know, when Zombie was doing his mandatory military service for South, you know, his country, South Korea, because of some of the injuries he suffered in MMA in the past and, you know, his career in general, they gave him more of an office type job. You know, he wasn't on the front lines fighting or anything like that, so he was able to train every day. And when you see most of these guys, like all the time we talk about, all the time Dominic Cruz missed over the years, that was because he was injured. And when you're injured, obviously you can't train. But the Zombie was healthy for almost the entire time, that 3+ years that he was away. So while he wasn't able to necessarily fight, he was able to train every day like he normally was. So I just thought that he would have less adapting to do than the average fighter who takes that much time off. But again, he, you know, that was, I think there's some there was some luck to that finish, because he's never been known as a guy with crazy insane power, but you know, he caught Bermudez with one really good punch.
Yeah, I mean, and he was able to thwart off the early takedowns too. That was always huge. And I always said, you know, it's not like 3 years of military service you're gonna go soft or anything like that. I know maybe it was more of a little bit of an office job, but it'll be interesting to see where the UFC takes a guy like the Korean Zombie from here. But let's shift our focus to UFC 208, and we'll start right from the top, John. We're going to have a women's featherweight championship fight, an inaugural one. The UFC finally made this weight class here. But, you know, before we even talk about the two fighters that are in there, the biggest thing is they're doing a championship without Chris Cyborg, who kind of shot herself in the own foot by failing that USADA test or getting flagged, at least. We'll still see how that plays out here. But it just doesn't feel the same without Cyborg.
No, it doesn't. And regardless of what the UFC will ever say, and they will never admit it, Dana White would never say it, the entire reason they created this division and this belt was because of her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when she's walking to the cage and Joe Rogan and previously Mike Goldberg and now John Anik, you know, they say, oh, Chris Cyborg, she's the Invicta heavyweight FC featherweight champion. No one cares.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it just doesn't mean the same as a UFC champion.
It's not even close. The amount of UFC fans who watch Invicta on a regular basis are extremely, extremely, extremely small. So,
and if they were, they were probably tuning in for somebody like Cyborg.
Right. And if they are watching Invicta, they know considerably more than just the top fighters.
Exactly.
So, you know, this to me, I don't like it, if for no other reason than I don't like the idea of rewarding someone who's losing. And Holly Holm has lost two fights in a row. So Your reward for losing two fights in a row is you get a title shot. And I said it before, I say it all the time. I know that there are too many events these days that every single fight can make sense rankings wise. They just don't have enough fighters to cover the events to make that happen. But I would hope that at least for main events of pay-per-views that you can do that. And this fight to me doesn't do that. And, you know, it's also in Brooklyn. So first time the UFC has been in Brooklyn. So while I certainly didn't expect the card of the caliber of the Madison Square Garden card, I thought it would be better than this.
Yeah, a little bit. But there's one thing for certain that's going to come out of this fight. I assume Cyborg is going to take the winner here of Holly Holm versus Jermaine Durandamy. Now, as far as the two stack up, they measure out pretty evenly, both in terms of odds and DraftKings salaries. Durandamy is 8,200 on DraftKings. Holm is 8,000. Holm's just a plus 105 dog last time I checked. Durandamy is minus 125 favorite. We seem to think, or at least the odds makers from one of our resources believes that the fight could go to a decision. Odds of that happening are minus 130. But overall, how do you see the fight between these two women breaking down?
It's hard because at least we've never seen either of these women fight at 145 pounds, you know, in the UFC. So that makes it a little tricky. Holly Holm never struck me. She never appeared to have problems making 135. So I don't know if the extra 10 pounds weight is all that big a deal for her. I think Durandamy is a bit more muscular while Holm is more, you know, kind of lean muscle. I picked Durandamy. And the main reason I did is because other than her win over Ronda Rousey, which, you know, by the day, or at least by the Ronda's fights, looks more and more, I don't want to use the word meaningless, but less impressive.
Like that was coming all along and Holm was just the first person to cash in.
Yeah, that's a very good way to put it. Holly Holm's been in 5 UFC fights. She won a split decision from Raquel Pennington in her first fight that many people, myself included, think she lost. She defeated Marion Renault in her second fight in a fight where neither woman really did anything over the course of the fight. Then you have the Rousey fight. And then her last two fights, Miesha Tate and Valentina Shevchenko, she lost both of them. So I know she got – Holly Holm got a lot of publicity for the Rousey fight. And obviously so, partially because of how it finished and the highlight and Ronda getting, you know, KO'd, you know, out cold. But Holly Holm has been, at least to me, in my viewing, a below average, or not, maybe that's not the right word, but she certainly hasn't lived up to the reputation that she's seemingly developed over her time in the UFC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I know you would feel the same way in that if either of these women, no matter who wins, have to face Chris Cyborg. I mean, if Cyborg gets that USDA deal figured out and straightened out, we're both picking Cyborg in a second.
Exactly. That would be a much more lopsided than a fight like this one here. One thing I do want to ask is the fight is being billed as a striker versus striker matchup, essentially. And you mentioned in your preview that you wrote for our website here that it could very well come down to who does something else a little bit better. Do you see any of these ladies maybe trying a takedown attempt just to see where it goes?
You know, they could. They're both actually, they haven't had to do much as far as defending takedowns in their UFC careers, but they've both been fairly good at it. Holmes just over 77%. Durandamy is actually over 80% in terms of takedowns defended. So They've been good in that area. Durandamy's an inch taller, 2-inch reach advantage, 3-inch reach advantage in the legs. And I think she has more power. Now, Holm might have more in terms of consistent combinations, but other than the Rousey fight, we've never really seen her, you know, land and, you know, consistently like that. And it doesn't get talked about, but she's 35 years old, which, and she got a late start to the sport. And in this sport, 35 years old is the back end of what you want to be doing. Mm-hmm. She'll be 36 in October. So this is hard. I could certainly see this going the distance. And the unfortunate thing is, even though this is 5 rounds, if this does go the distance, I would guess that it's going to be rather unentertaining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're billing it striker versus striker. So DraftKings-wise, if it goes the distance, I think both of these women could rack up a decent points. And since the prices aren't off the charts, there could be a case for using them in this fight. So, I mean, I kind of like it from a DraftKings perspective, assuming that we can get enough significant strikes landed, maybe with a few knockdowns or something along those lines in there.
Yeah, so, I mean, in that sense, it would be good. But neither of these women really project as one of those heavy, you know, heavy hitter, knockout hitters. Mm-hmm. But, I understand that this is a title fight, and I certainly know that the UFC is of the feeling that if they put a title fight on a card that it makes it makes the entire card better and whatever they want to say. But this fight doesn't do a ton for me. Mm-hmm. And if for no other reason than whoever wins is going to be viewed as nothing more than a placeholder until Cyborg gets cleared to fight.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely do agree with that mentality. I do, before we move on, I'm going to offer up my pick, and I'm actually going to take Holm in this one. This is one of my upset picks. You know, 3 of the 4 of our RotoWire MMA staff members all think it's Durandamy, so I'm definitely going against the grain a little bit here. I just think that, okay, you look at Holm's 2 losses. Misha Tate, she was beating Misha Tate handily until Misha kind of got that choke in at the end, gutted it out, and then her other loss is definitely a respectable one. I mean, Valentina Shevchenko just took really good care of Juliana Peña, and she's going to be fighting for a bantamweight title pretty soon here. So the losses are respectable enough. And I just, when you look at the two fighters, camp's a big thing. I know you like to talk about camp. Holly Holm, I think Jackson Wink MMA are going to get her ready. Durandamy, I heard some stuff about her maybe leaving AKA, American Kickboxing Academy. I don't know if that is how that exactly is shaking out. So there's the camp factor for me. And finally, the intangible thing is Holly is used to the spotlight. She's absolutely been there on the big stage before, and we haven't quite seen the same from Durandamy. So I think when I add up all the factors I like to look at, I think Holm gets a few more tally marks on my end, but I'm not like overflowing with confidence with this upset pick. I just think that there's a pretty decent chance she can get there. But I definitely see where you guys are coming from by going to Durandamy. That's kind of more of the chalk one.
Yeah, I don't think there's really that big of a difference either way, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a close fight and, you know, maybe not the most exciting fight. I guess we'll wait and see. But who knows? Maybe these ladies will surprise us here. But the fight on this card that is really put on here to sell some pay-per-views is the co-main event, and that's a middleweight matchup here between Anderson Silva and Derek Brunson. Anybody that's remotely heard of MMA or UFC could probably name Anderson Silva. I mean, he's 41 years old, but he is a legend in the sport, quite possibly the greatest of all time. But he hasn't won in any of his last five fights. That's four losses and one no contest here. So he comes in as the underdog. Silva's 7,900. Brunson's 8,300. As far as Vegas odds go, Brunson's minus 150 favorite. Silva's a plus 130 dog. And we don't have the odds to finish here. Under 1.5 rounds is plus 110. Silva by TKO is plus 175. So, you know, maybe we'll see those odds come out in the next couple of days here. But basically, how do you see this one playing out, John?
You know, Anderson Silva is certainly on the back end of his career. Now, this, like you said, was put on the card to help. The card was really struggling. And this was put on the card to help sell tickets. And, you know, the casual fan doesn't know anything about Derek Brunson. So they were hoping Anderson's name did that. Now, I think I picked Brunson. I didn't really hesitate when I made my decision, but it comes with a caveat. In Derek Brunson's last fight against Robert Whittaker, he looked terrific early on, had Whittaker hurt badly, and he came out swinging. Yep, and it ended up being his problem. He came out swinging, had Durandamay hurt. Had Whittaker hurt very, very badly, and looked very close to a finish on numerous occasions, but he punched himself out. And he tired himself out, and Robert Whittaker hits really, really hard. And as soon as Brunson was gassed from everything that he tried to do, Whittaker just took over and just pounded him. So I expect Brunson to come out hot again and try to get the early jump on Anderson. Now, if he does the same thing and Anderson survives early and he's able to hang on, I could see Anderson maybe getting more offense in rounds two and three if it gets that far. Mm-hmm. But at Anderson's age, and he certainly doesn't move like he used to, I'm just not entirely convinced that he can survive that first initial flurry.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely definitely understand those concerns, John. I did pick Anderson, though, and I think our staff, you know, it's not a democracy. If we did it by vote, I think we'd say Silva. But the reason for that being is because we watched that Brunson fight against Whittaker where he came out swinging so bad. And even at 41 years old, I still think Anderson Silva, one of his biggest strengths has always been counter-striking, counter-punches, being patient. And I think he'll be able to outlast an initial flurry and then eventually start to pick things apart. But again, it comes with that caveat. It's how is Brunson going to come out and approach this fight? I saw some of the media day stuff going on today, how he was like, well, against Whittaker, I'm paraphrasing here, but against Whittaker, he wanted to come up and get this highlight reel knockout, and he thought maybe if he did that, he'd be able to jump a little bit in the rankings and kind of cheat the system, get into that title conversation at the very least. But I think he'll be more likely, because this is a 7-8 if you go by the UFC rankings, I think he's going to be more likely to be a little bit more calculated in this fight. I still got Silva in this, but I definitely understand why Brunson is the favorite.
You know, it just, Anderson Silva fight a little less than a year ago against Michael Bisping is what kind of had me change my tune about Anderson, or at least nowadays. And that's just because that was a fight that the old Anderson would have dominated. Yes. Bisping doesn't have a ton of power. He gets by on grit, durability, you know, output and conditioning. Mm-hmm. And Anderson 4 or 5, or, you know, even 2 or 3, you know, even 3 years ago, would eat someone like that for lunch.
Yeah. He did kind of get Bisping with the flying knee. I know they didn't call the fight, but he had his window there where it was pretty close.
It was a close fight. But Anderson, not necessarily even in his prime, but just a step below his prime, destroys someone like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And not only did he not destroy him, but he lost.
Exactly. So, lost the tough decision
there. But then, like you just said, though, if Brunson didn't learn anything from the Whittaker fight, then that's on him.
Absolutely. Him and his camp and whatnot. But I do see exactly where you're coming from here. And I know we differ on the picks for the first two fights here, but let's take a look at this middleweight bout between Jacare Souza and Tim Bosch, who I think we can both see eye to eye on this. Souza comes in as a massive favorite. He's 9,500 on DraftKings compared to the Barbarian, who is 6,700. I think one of the cheaper fighters on the card. Vegas says Souza's a minus 500 favorite. Bosch a plus 400 dog here. The most likely outcome, according to Vegas, says Souza by submission, minus 155. I mean, I'm pretty sure we both got Souza in this fight, and we don't really see it being all that close.
No, this is terrible. This is just, I know these, and Jacare is 37 years old, so I know that he wants to stay active, but this is bad.
Because he was supposed to fight Luke Rockhold, and yes, that got canceled. Rockhold had to withdraw, not quite healthy yet. And rather than stay sidelined, because it looks like Yoel Romero is going to get the next shot here at Michael Bisping, rather than stay sidelined, I guess he'll take another fight. And I can't blame him for doing that, but he really doesn't have a lot to gain from this.
He has nothing. He has absolutely nothing to gain from this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, officially, since really over his entire career, Jacare lost his first professional fight in 2003, and he has three losses since then. A 2008 loss to Gegard Mousasi, a 2011 loss to Rockhold, and a loss in December 2015 to Yoel Romero via split decision. A
controversial one.
In a fight that, you know, Jacare won. I know Romero was given the decision, but Jacare won that fight, and had he got the call, it would have changed the complexion of the middleweight division moving forward.
Absolutely.
So I guess what you said is right, in the sense that the guy has to make a living, and if he wins easily and he does it without sustaining any real injuries, then it's fine. It's a fight that makes absolutely zero sense from a ranking standpoint or anything like that. Bosch is far closer to retirement than he is to impacting the middleweight title picture, but to Bosch's credit, him and his management team deserve some credit. They got him a fight that he doesn't deserve against, a top five guy who's on the verge of fighting for a title. And if he loses, the whole world expects him to get obliterated. So if he loses, who cares? You know, what difference does it make? No one thinks he's going to win anyway.
And you never know. He's going to come out hunting for these big knockouts. And you know Jacare is going to be prepared for that. But you never know what happens if something like that lands. But kind of backtracking a bit, looking at this fight from a fantasy perspective, the real question is, Souza comes with a $9,500 price tag. And I think we all pretty much agree he's as close to a lock as it'll get in this sport. Of course, you never know with a fighter's chance here or a possibly lucky punch. But do you pay up for him on a DraftKings lineup, knowing that it'll cost you possibly another favorite or two in your six fighter lineup?
I would consider it for two reasons. One is what you just said, the discrepancy in talent. That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. But the second thing is, I would consider it here because this is not a card where there are a whole lot of underdogs that I like. So it's going to be difficult to, at least for me, it would be difficult to look at the fights and say, there are three or four or five underdogs I like, so I can, take some of those guys and pay up for a guy like this. There aren't that many I like on this card. So he, for such a high salary fighter at, like you mentioned, at 9,500, I think that's normally we don't really advocate putting guys of that salary in your lineup, because if they don't get an early knockout or an early finish, the rest of your lineup is pretty much shot. But I certainly think he's a better idea at 9,500 than your average fighter who has a price tag that high.
Yeah, absolutely. And just the converse of that, if you did somehow think Bosch had a fighter's chance, then you could probably fit four favorites in there. But I just don't know. It's almost like throwing away a roster spot at this point.
It is. There's no, what's the word I'm looking for? Statistical argument that could be made to think he's going to win. It's just not there. Sure, anybody can beat anybody with a lucky punch. That can always happen. but there's no realistic reason to think he's going to win.
Absolutely. So we think the middleweight division is a little bit top-heavy, which is why we result in a fight like this. But let's move on to the next fight in the light heavyweight division, which is probably one of the shallowest divisions in the entire UFC here. So we end up with a fight like Glover Teixeira against Jared Cannonier?
Cannonier.
There we go. Whoops, that was my bad. But so you got Teixeira against Cannonier here, where Teixeira checks in as a pretty big favorite, 8,700 on DraftKings compared to Cannonier, who's just 7,500. Minus 185 for Teixeira here, pretty big Vegas favorite. Now, against some of the top in the light heavyweight division, we're maybe not taking Glover here, but in this one, he seems like a pretty safe pick.
He does to me. And this is just, as far as I can tell, another case of when the light heavyweight division is arguably the thinnest in the company. But this is another fight that makes absolutely zero sense to me. Mm-hmm. Glover Teixeira might not be on the level of the Daniel Cormiers or the Anthony Johnsons or the John Joneses when he's not suspended, but he's certainly a top five light heavyweight, if you want to say that. Mm-hmm. So he's a guy who challenged for a title against Jones. I know he got torched by Rumble in his last fight in 13 seconds, but
mm-hmm. I mean, Rumble's been torching everybody that's not DC lately. And yeah, those two will get to fight again soon, but
there's no shame in that.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Again, just like Jacare, Teixeira's in the same spot. A fight that makes no sense at all from a ranking standpoint. So you better not only win, but you better make sure that you don't get hurt.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to stay in that top five, you definitely need to, you got to protect yourself there because, like you said, that light heavyweight to division there, I mean, you got DC and Johnson, and then I guess there's Gustafson if he comes back, and then Teixeira's right there. So he wants to stay in that top five, make sure that a title shot is potentially within reach, and the only way to do that is to win in dominant fashion.
It is, and I don't know what – I know they have to fill fights like we said, but I don't know what Jared Cannonier ever did to earn a fight like this.
Mm-hmm.
He's had three fights in the UFC. He started out at heavyweight. He's now fighting at light heavyweight. He certainly looks better at 205 than he does at heavyweight, but he's never in his entire career anywhere faced anyone remotely of Teixeira's ability. So, again, could this be someone who steps up and gets a step up in competition and responds in a big way? Sure. Just like, Bosch could win, but the odds of it happening are not good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Cannonier is 5 years younger, and I guess he's only got 10 professional fights, so I guess there's a little bit of the unknown factor, but the MMA writers at RotoWire across the board, we all went with Glover. We kind of went with a comfortable pick that we know and feel pretty safe with because, outside the top two fights on this card, the main and co-main, can be relatively close, but the next three, as you'll find here, are pretty one way, at least in terms of the projections here. So speaking of those, we'll move to a lightweight bout between Dustin Poirier and Jim Miller. The DraftKings salaries have Poirier as a massive favorite here, 9,300 compared to just a $6,900 salary for Miller. Vegas agrees. Poirier is not quite as big of a favorite as Jacare, but he's a minus 450 favorite, and Miller's a plus 360 favorite. The most likely outcome is a knockout for Poirier under 2.5 rounds. That's just kind of me extrapolating from what I see across various prop bets here. You think the odds makers and DraftKings folks got this one right, John?
Yeah, I certainly do. Jim Miller, not all that long ago, less than a year ago, really, looked like he was finished. And to his credit, he's run off three straight wins since then. Takanori Gomi, Joe Lozon, Thiago Alves. None of them were pretty. Miller's fights rarely are. But we've said this before. It's the same old story for Miller. He has no power in his hands. None. Mm-hmm. So he's going to have serious problems with opponents who can pressure him on the feet. And say what you want about Poirier, and he's been inconsistent in his career. He dropped down to lightweight. He looked good in a win over Joe Duffy. He destroyed Bobby Green. And then he goes out in his last fight in September and gets beaten by Michael Johnson in a minute and 35 seconds. So the inconsistency thing is there, but there's no doubt who the more explosive of the two men is, athletic wise. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt who hits harder, and there's no doubt who has more ways to win a fight, and that's the diamond. Miller is, you know, he is what he's always been. He's a ground fighter, submission guy who has to grind his way to a win, and it can happen against lesser talent, but it's going to be a struggle to win those kind of fights when you're forced to step up in competition. And despite Miller's 3-fight winning streak, you know, Dustin Poirier is considerably better than Takanori Gomi, Joe Lozon, and Thiago Alves.
Yeah. Oh, most definitely here. So the real toss-up, John, I'll throw a toss-up at you here, is you're making your DraftKings lineup. Poirier's 9,300. Sousa's 9,500. Which one do you feel safer with putting in your lineup?
That's really hard.
Because you can't use them both. You know, that's the tough part. You're going to have to make some tough decisions because, I guess you technically could use them both. It's physically possible. But chances are you're going to have to put several big underdogs in, and you don't want to pick guys that are fighting against each other in a DraftKings lineup. That I will never advise using that strategy here. So you kind of got to pick one or the other. And
I would pick Jacare because I think Miller's more durable than Bosch. Mm-hmm. Jim Miller's only been stopped 3 times in his entire career, so he might not win, but yeah. I think he has a better chance of lasting longer, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, for me, it comes down to like who's more likely to get the first round finish because you're hunting for that big DraftKings bonus. I think Sousa is more likely to get a submission in the first round than someone like Poirier would be to knock Jim Miller out in the first round.
I could see Jacare running across the cage, throwing Bosch to the ground and ripping his arm off.
Yep, I mean, not quite a Francis Ngannou Kimura takedown, but, no, you know, but like, something like that.
I literally think you could see Bosch try and push forward and Jacare like block one of his lazy shots and throw him to the ground and just submit him in like a minute.
Because once that goes to the ground, I mean, once
if that fight ends up on the ground, the fight's over.
Yeah, I mean, he's right there with Damian Maia as like the best grapplers, best jiu-jitsu in the entire promotion,
and
any weight class.
As strong as anyone in the division too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely here. So yeah, I think we can both agree that it's a Jacare. You're putting him in your lineup. At least he's going to go in the great majority of mine here. But staying on the topic of DraftKings here, does the card find or present any value plays to help you afford getting some of these favorites in your lineup?
You know, and I know this kind of, we're not supposed to say this. This is not a card where there are all that many underdogs that I really love.
Mm-hmm. Which does make lineup assembly pretty tough.
It does. And normally, you know, on cards like this that have 11, 12, or 13 fights, I can come up with at least 3 or 4, you know, maybe even 5 or 6 underdogs where I go, well, you know, I think that guy has, you know, at least, you know, 50-50 kind of thing. I had a really hard time with this fight. A couple of the underdogs I did take straight out to win. Nick Lentz was one. And if you gave me free money and you said bet on someone, I probably would have bet on Islam Makhachev. But I took Lentz. I still don't think Lentz is a good DK play because even if he wins, it's going to be a boring wrestling match. Mm-hmm. So he might win, but that doesn't really help you all that much unless he racks up, you know, 700 takedowns mm-hmm. in 15 minutes. So
exactly.
Still wouldn't advise that. Mm-hmm. And the other guy was Justin Willis, excuse me, who was a last minute replacement for Marcin Tybura. Mm-hmm.
You got that and unknown factor.
Somebody actually tweeted me on Twitter not long ago, what do you know about Justin Willis? And I said, I basically nothing, but I picked him. And that's more because I don't think Tybura is really any good. You know, he came
actually. It's tough to adjust your strategy for these last minute switches. You want to still stay on the card and get paid here, but your camp was preparing for somebody else.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have a choice really when you're a guy like that, who's entirely unknown. What we were talking about before, you know, I don't think guys like Glover Teixeira and Jacare Souza have to accept fights like they did. I'm sure part of the reason they did accept is because they're on the pay-per-view and that's going to up their payday, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Without a doubt.
The main card of a pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. But yeah. when you're one of the, you know, mid-card guys who are still trying to make a name for themselves, you kind of have to take what they throw to you. So I took Willis. And the thing that I'm a little terrified at is I'm not really entirely convinced he's going to show up in shape. but
oh yeah. So weigh-ins will be a good indication of that. If you tune in for the early weigh-ins, I know a lot of sites broadcast the real weigh-ins live, and then of course you'll see the FS1 weigh-ins later on in the afternoon. So weigh-ins might be a good indication of whether or not someone like Justin Willis will come in shape, ready to go. I mean, he is it's a heavyweight fight. So
it's a heavyweight fight, but I mean, from everything I've seen, he's fat's not the right word, but he's going to be closer to 65 than Tybura is.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, look, it's not a card that has a lot of underdogs that I like. So, I picked him because if I'm writing an article for everybody to read and I pick all the favorites, what good does that do?
Exactly. You got to at least get a valid lineup in here. I did want to mention that mathematically here, you get $8,333 per fighter. So if you look at it from the odds, there are two fighters that check in under that average price that are still favorites in the fight. One of those is Durandamy at 8,200, so she might help make a little bit of wiggle room for you. And the other one is Jared Brooks, who's going up against Ian McCall. And both Brooks and McCall are actually 8,100, so whoever you like in that fight could help fill out your lineup. But I can see the reasoning behind those prices, because both of those fights are really expected to go the distance, or are likely to go the distance.
And I, you know, Jared Brooks is a guy who making his UFC debut. And I thought that was a little, because, you know, we see more and more guys come into the UFC these days and who we seemingly know nothing about, and see guys fight really well. So if you notice on DraftKings, these unknown guys are getting a bit more of a higher salary than they used to, because they're just not getting run over like a lot of guys used to. You know, a lot of guys just get overwhelmed when they came in.
Mm-hmm.
But
the big example is Lando Venata that I like to think of. He put Tony Ferguson on the ropes like early in that fight.
But I mean, I know he's had problem getting fights for really ridiculous numbers of reasons, his health, his opponent's health, but Ian McCall is really, really good. Mm-hmm. Like easy top 10, almost top 5 flyweight good.
Yeah, I know. It was either people way missing weight or illness or personal matters. He's had a rough 2016 as far as cancellations go.
He's really good though, like legitimate. So that for a guy who's never fought in the company, that is kind of strange to me. So, but again, like you said, odds wise for prop bets, smaller guys, not a ton of power either way. Good chance goes the distance, makes it tough.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're almost better off if you don't know what to do. You're almost like, and you're undecided. You're almost better off taking and putting heavyweight in your lineup, if for no other reason because they hit so hard that the fight will probably end early one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We didn't have all the odds to finish ready to go before this show, but if you look at a site like bestfightodds.com, that's my tiebreaker. If I need somebody to fill up the lineup and I'm choosing between two or three fighters, just look for odds to finish, see what fight can end early, maybe chase those bonuses here. But fantasy stuff aside, John, I know the card is a little bit underwhelming on a whole, but what are the fights that you're most excited to see?
I want to see the Brunson Silva fight because if Silva gets overwhelmed, I'm curious what he does.
Yeah, to see how he reacts. Exactly.
It was a long time ago, time wise, he signed whatever the heck did. It was like an 8-fight deal or a 10, something like that. Whatever it was, there's definitely a bunch of fights left on the deal. Because he just hasn't fought, you know, between the suspension and everything. He hasn't fought as often as, you know, people would have imagined. So I don't really know what he's going to do. Like, does he keep pretending that he can still make another run and fight decent guys? Does he kind of fall more back into, like, a gatekeeper status and, you know, stay with the company, but fight older guys who really aren't title threats anymore and just try and draw, you know, kind of like it's a bit, you know, not a direct example, but kind of like Bellator does with their guys, like, you know, like the San and Ortiz, you know, they're not top 5 guys and top guys in the world anymore, but they do numbers and ratings. So they put them against each other kind of deal.
I like the gatekeeper idea, just because someone that they could maybe use his name to sell fights and give some younger guys the opportunities. Yeah, exactly.
What they're doing here.
So, yeah, I mean, if Brunson gets a highlight reel knockout of a UFC legend, then all of a sudden he does sneak his way into the conversation for a title. There's a couple guys in line first, but I see what they're doing here.
It's, you know, and this, yeah. And I forget who it is, but we were talking about this not all that long ago, some fight, and we said, it was the Yair Rodriguez BJ
Penn. Yep. And yeah, we basically Rodriguez needed a highlight reel knockout, and he got one against a legend.
It was exactly what we thought would happen. Rodriguez destroyed him, and now every time you hear Yair Rodriguez fight, when they build him up on everything, they're going to say he knocked out BJ Penn.
Yeah, exactly. Just, you know, they're going to forget about what year it was or when the last time Penn was in the octagon. And
doesn't matter.
Yeah, I'm still pulling for Silva. I mean, this is the one. This is the fight that I put down as my most excited to see here. I just want to see where he's at. And then as far as the prelims go, we did touch on this fight earlier. I want to see Uncle Creepy again because, like we mentioned, he's a good fighter. Uncle Creepy, meaning Ian McCall, one of the better nicknames, I think. But actually, as far as best nicknames go, I'm a big fan of the Texecutioner. But anyway, that's besides the point. Uncle Creepy, Ian McCall, that should be a good one because I've been excited to see him again for a while, but a run of bad breaks. So there are good fights to watch on this card. I know we kind of dog it as a whole, but there are a couple ones that are definitely worth tuning in for.
No, there are good entertaining fights on the card. Mm-hmm. It's just when you look up and down the card, you'd probably say the problem is it has a title fight and it has Silva on it, which immediately means it's going to cost money. That's just how it goes, at least now.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we'll get a little bit, maybe some more high quality fights. Well, definitely March 4th, we got UFC 209 because we got the Wonderboy Woodley rematch, as well as we get to see Khabib fight Tony Ferguson.
Oh, yeah, those fights right there are worth your money.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll be back with you guys for UFC 209 to break down that, and I'm excited to see how they fill out the rest of their card there. But once again, guys, we're going to wrap this up. Thanks again for listening to the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. Again, you got fantasy MMA questions, general MMA questions. You can tweet us. You can get @John Littering. You can follow me @JakeSki52. And like I said, we'll be back prior to UFC 209. Thanks again for joining me, John, and enjoy the card.
You got it. Talk to you soon.
This is the story of Harry's. For decades, one big razor company has relentlessly increased prices and reaped immense profits at the expense of its customers. Then one day, an ordinary guy got ripped off buying razors. He was so fed up that he and his best friend started a company to fix shaving. They called it Harry's. By taking less profit and selling online, Harry's can offer quality blades for less. You can even get Harry's 5-blade razor and shave gel for free when you sign up. Just cover shipping. Click or go to harrys.com and enter code RAZOR at checkout. That's RAZOR, R-A-Z-O-R.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.